You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid. Why so? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. How you doing this evening? Hope you've had a great weekend. Hope you got to a farmer's market this weekend. Maybe one near you in Sebastopol or Healdsburg. You've got one more week to attend community farmer's markets. And then until the markets start opening next year, April is the first one, beginning of April, you have the Santa Rosa Farmers Market. That is what we are focusing on tonight. But I also wanted to tell you, Beaujolais Nouveau, it has arrived. The world's newest wine was released on Thursday, and I really had no idea that it was quite as controversial as it is. I did a post on my blog, Eat This Now, and I got a number of comments about how awful Beaujolais Nouveau is, and you shouldn't drink it, and it should all be poured into the ocean or something. So next year, I will make sure in advance of the release, we'll have somebody to put it in perspective. There's actually still time to catch at least one of the celebrations, but if you have a French bistro near you, I don't know, maybe the charcuterie up in Healdsburg, you know, anywhere that serves really French country food, you might check. There's still time to go out to dinner after Mouthful, of course. And I'm going to be heading over to French Garden, where they're doing the first Sebastopol celebration of Beaujolais Nouveau in about 6 years. The last one was at K&L Wine Bar, which is now Starlight Lounge. And they were packed 1 year. Oh, my goodness. People were standing four and five deep at the little bar waiting to get their bottle of Beaujolais Nouveau and the Veuve Bourguignon that Karen and Lucas Martin made. I can still see it when I close my eyes. I can still taste it. It was so good. And I think I'm going to be eating some beef bourguignon in probably about 2 hours. But first, we're going to talk to some farmers, really good people who are bringing really good things to the farmers market and offer one of the reasons that I feel optimistic when I wake up in the morning, because you know, life isn't life without farmers, and I mean that in a very literal way. So I'd like to welcome to Mouthful Adam Davidoff. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you got it.
Great. From New Family Farm.
Yep.
And Ellie Hilmer from Wild Rose Ranch.
Yes.
And Jill Adams of Crescent Moon Farm.
Hi.
Hi. And you've been through some battles lately, Jill. You guys all have just really rallied to, I think, keep the Santa Rosa Farmers Market on track. So I'd just like to say bravo to everyone's efforts, and glad to see things are looking really good. The market was great yesterday.
Yeah, the market's been solid for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to everybody pulling together and working together and just sort of moving on. There was some negativity there for a while.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we're all past that and we can all work together and create this, you know, recreate this wonderful market that it is.
Yeah, it is. It's so great. I mean, I've watched that market for so long. I mean, and it existed for so long before I started shopping there. I think I started going to it sometime in the 80s. and it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger in the last decade to where it's huge.
It's exciting. Yeah, it's the biggest market in Sonoma County.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, and when you're driving in, say I'm coming in from Sebastopol, so I go past the fairgrounds and swing around on Brookwood, and you see it from the distance. You get, I think, that distant view makes you realize how really big it is. You just see all these tents. It's like, wow, this looks like the Marin County Market, which is huge. They just have more concentrated population down there, and they can support a big central market. But I think we can, too. So before we talk about the market itself, why don't we just go around and talk about what each of you do? I'm going to start with you, Adam.
Sure. I'm an owner of New Family Farm. We're in Sebastopol.
Whereabouts?
Off Ferguson Road, sort of heading out towards the coast on Bodega Highway.
Absolutely.
And we just landed on that piece of property last spring, actually, in March.
So new is really the operative word here.
Yeah, on this piece of land, it still feels really fresh. And we've sort of scrambled last spring to pull it all together, but we made it happen. And we've got some pretty wet fields. We're in a low valley. So we kind of waited to plant until the end of May or early June and weren't really coming to the market with tables loaded until mid-July.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of later than a lot of folks, but that's okay. Farming's a waiting game.
Yeah. And do you have a particular specialty, or is it seasonal crops?
We're focusing on root and storage crops as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We're staying away from the fruiting crops like the tomatoes and the peppers and that stuff, and really focusing on beets and carrots, winter squash, garlic, potatoes, onions, celery roots, parsnips, things that store good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, because our fields are so wet, we can get that planting in and done, get everything harvested, and then into appropriate storage and sell it out of storage.
Oh,
that's
uh-huh.
sort of the model that we're shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be doing all of that with a team of Belgian draft horses who are...
Really?
Who are... We're working with them. They're not working our fields yet for us, but soon it will be the partnership that we want it to.
And mm-hmm. And how much land?
This year we grew a little bit under 2 acres of crops. We lease about 14, so mm-hmm. some pasture for our milk and goats and some pasture for those horses, and probably be growing up around 4 acres next year, but maybe a little less than that, and just probably open up the spacing, like not grow things in such a dense area.
Uh-huh.
For a lot of different reasons, but mostly for keeping things weeded and cultivated with those horses.
Uh-huh. Interesting, working with it.
Yeah.
I bet they're beautiful.
Yeah, they're big and graceful and humbling would be another word too.
Ellie, Wild Rose Ranch. I see you at the farmer's market. I bought some of your, I bought sauerkraut.
Yes.
And you did a kimchi too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I got your sauerkraut and kimchi. So, and you run a CSA too, right?
Yes, yeah. My farm is up on Sonoma Mountain. My partner, Balin, this is his uncle's property. And so Balin's the third generation on the property in his family. And so we're renting land from his uncle up there. It's a beautiful little microclimate. It's a south-facing slope on the north side of the mountain. And so we don't have any views, but we're just kind of tucked down, surrounded by oak trees, and there's a ton of wildlife. We're neighboring over 200 acres of Sonoma County open space.
Oh, how nice.
And so there's a ton of wildlife that comes through the area. And then we're also... growing on a couple of acres of some neighbor's property that's down the road.
Uh-huh.
So we've been expanding a little bit this year.
And what's your specialty?
Because we started out as a CSA farm, we really try and grow diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try and grow a little bit of everything, vegetables, fruits. The CSA runs from mid-May through the first week of November. So that's our main growing season, but we still have a lot that we're bringing to the market right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then as our vegetables dwindle, we have a lot of storage and preserves that we bring.
Mm-hmm.
I make strawberry jam with our strawberries from the summer, and we have dried herbs, dried tea, chamomile, and Tulsi tea and dried tomatoes. And then I make sauerkraut, and I source the vegetables from other local farms. I actually have my cortito here. I brought this because...
Oh, cortito. Great. I love cortito. A lot of people don't know what it is, so why don't you explain?
Cortito is a Salvadorian-style kraut, sauerkraut. It's I make it with cabbage, carrots, red onions, and chili peppers. It's traditionally served on pupusas and tamales. But this jar of cortito, the ingredients, it's cabbage from the New Family Farm from Adam, carrots and red onions from Wild Rose Ranch, that's my farm, and chili peppers from Crescent Moon Farm.
That's true. Well, perfect, and I didn't plan this.
And then sea salt, and that's all that's in here, and I ferment it for a few weeks, and so it's a good probiotic food. A lot of people have been enjoying.
I think people are returning to maybe, or just renewing interest in naturally fermented foods. They're so good for you.
Absolutely. I mean, in addition to people being interested in buying it at the market, a ton of people come up and just want to talk about it.
Oh, really?
And I love it. I love talking to people about fermenting. I think it's a lot of fun, and it's kind of a lost knowledge that people are trying to find again.
Yeah.
And,
well, we're going to revisit this topic in a little bit, but let's get Jill into the conversation.
Hi.
Crescent Moon Farms.
Yes.
Great chiles.
Oh, thank you.
I eat them almost daily from the time you have them until they're gone.
Yes, yeah.
So you're located in Rincon Valley?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. On a small piece of property. It's just a house that I rent, and then the back field. It's about a third of an acre.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got chickens on, I don't know, maybe like a fifth of an acre or something. Mm-hmm. So, and then we also rent... officially, I think on the lease it says for $1 a year, another half acre up the hill from us, off of Calistoga Road.
Okay, mm-hmm, great. Mm-hmm. And your specialty is?
Oh, probably the chilies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then something else we're known for are the dry beans. And
but also your
beans.
Okra.
The okra.
Your pink, your pink or your red, whatever mm-hmm. it's called officially. It's
gorgeous,
just really, really beautiful. The first time I saw it, it looked like a basket full of little porcelain sculptures. It's just gorgeous.
Fresh okra looks fresh.
Yeah.
And not fresh okra does not look fresh.
No.
You can really tell the difference.
Yeah. And you also are doing dried chilies.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing a great chipotle powder.
Yeah, thanks. I know. I think that's what you initially.
That's the first thing I got from you.
Yeah, that's the first thing you bought from us. Yeah. The chili powders have been excellent. They've been really mm-hmm. fun. And it's nice. You know, people think, gosh, you know, well, what would you use this for? I said, everything. And anything. Really, like, you don't have to find a recipe that calls for paprika. You just put the jar on your table and you put it on every dish, on your eggs, on your squash, on your beans, on your popcorn, in your hot chocolate. I mean, really, everything. Seriously, everything. Except maybe breakfast cereal, I guess.
maybe not breakfast cereal, but eggs in the morning.
Absolutely.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Almost anything that you're going to do that has to do with a tortilla.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do about 10, at least 10 different varieties of the chili powders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really nice.
And then when you make your chipotle, do mm-hmm. all the different ones go into it?
No, the chipotle is just the smoked jalapenos. We grow two different kinds of jalapenos for mm-hmm. that. There's a milder one, but it's bigger, and so it's better for processing.
Mm-hmm.
And then a smaller one is hotter, and so we get a nice blend. But we only use the ripe one, so it's extra sweet. Mm-hmm. Really good flavor. I think
it is really
sweet.
When
you first taste it, you notice the sweetness, mm-hmm. and then the heat comes in.
Uh-huh.
But obviously you notice the smokiness as well, but it's, uh-huh. yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. Now, for all of you, this has been a challenging year, certainly for grape farmers. How has it been for the three of you? Just jump on in.
This year actually wasn't so challenging up until sort of the fall transition for us. All of our crops were really happy that it wasn't too hot.
Oh, they're like me.
Yeah. You know, the beets did great.
Oh my God, I'm a root vegetable. I have no idea.
You know, the beets did great. The carrots did great. We grew a lot of different greens, like arugula and spinach as well.
So you're doing greens as well?
We are doing greens, yeah.
Excellent. There's such a need for that.
Yeah, it seems like the more people are bringing to Santa Rosa, the better. People are always asking about them.
Mm-hmm.
But our winter squashes did wonderful. Actually, it's a shorter day winter squash that comes to us from the Southwest, from my farming partner and his fiance's family, and it's sort of designed to
to finish in 90 days or bred to finish in 90 days, unlike most winter squashes, which take, you know, 120 or longer. So it did great with sort of the not so much heat that we had this summer, and it was ready to go mid-September when we picked it.
Great. So the cool summer, and then did those heat waves that we had, did that cause you any problems, or was that okay?
Knock on wood, we had nothing bolting. We had just, you know, it was fine. It was totally fine, and it didn't stress anything out noticeably. Sans, you know, our second succession of cabbage. You know, it was, we were lucky, I think. And we live in a really, in a microclimate there in that little valley. The wind comes and keeps things cool.
Yeah, it's a nice part of West County.
Yeah, right on the fog belt.
Yes. I'm just about a mile, maybe 2 miles from there myself. So, yeah, the fog belt.
Yeah. We did get hit pretty darn hard this fall with those first rains in the beginning of October, maybe 3 weeks ago or a month ago. I can't keep track of when it was. But Santa Rosa got supposedly about 4 inches, and we got 8+. And,
oh, dude, we got that much. Wow.
Yeah, we got a ton, and it pretty much killed everything we had growing, which is kind of disheartening, but it's fine. That's how it goes. And sort of felt like complaining for a while, and I'm over it now.
And how did the two of you do, Ellie and Jill? Is the weather okay?
Yeah, up at our place, we're on a slope, and so the late wet spring, we did okay with. Our whole garden is hand cultivated on our home site, and so with that method, we didn't have to wait until the soil, all this field had dried out to cultivate. We could just cultivate the areas that had dried out. So the spring did okay, and throughout the summer, most of the crops that we grow were used to being behind the valleys because we're at 1,100 feet up on the mountain. So we're not in the race of trying to be the first at the market with anything. We're always the last at the market with everything. So we were used to that. In our new fields at our neighbors down the road, that was a learning experience, just getting to know new soils and the new exposure of those fields. It's a very different microclimate, even though it's just a quarter mile down the road. And so so we did have just some challenges there, but it just helps to prepare us for next year.
Yeah. And Jill, you seemed pretty solid throughout the season.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, a couple of things. I partnered with a woman named Libby Batesel, who's starting her own farm, Beet Generation.
Yes.
B-E-E-T.
She has a small CSA, right, downtown Santa Rosa CSA, which I think is so great.
Yeah. And she really pushed us on the root vegetables and greens this year. And so that helped fill in where we would have had some losses or at least lagging crops this summer. We had turnips all summer long, which I've never grown a turnip in my life. So that was really exciting to, you know, in my... I'll say it right here now, my last year, to be trying new crops. So that was exciting. And then, so okra, I don't know if you probably never even saw a big basket of okra at our table this year because we really didn't have that.
I saw it once. Just,
we had a decent sized basket, but
it was gone.
And it went, in a heartbeat. So the okra really didn't like it this summer, and we planted 3 50-foot beds of it, and each bed had 2 rows. So it should have been a lot of okra, and it just wasn't. So there were things like the peppers came later than they should have, quote unquote. And so now when everything, or like the last month, things have been ripening up pretty quickly, but it's also now a race between rot and ripening because we've had a lot of moisture and it's, you know, less daylight hours and cooler nights. And so, we're not going to have as much chili powders because the chilies didn't start ripening until later. So it's whatever, it's been a toss up, but we also have a lot of root crops and greens and things because of Libby's influence on the farm. So it's been great. Yeah, it's been really great.
Now, will all of you farm year round or do you have some downtime?
I don't farm year round typically. Okay. I need downtime.
We've been trying to work towards that, and each year we go further into the winter with our vegetables. But this year still we have a solid fall garden planted, but it's not going to get us through the whole winter. Mm-hmm. So we'll have 1 or 2 months where we aren't bringing a lot of vegetables to market. But
you have your, yeah. your preserved fruits. And how about you, Adam?
Well, farming necessarily requires us to wear too many different hats at once. Oh. And in an ideal world, I'd love to be able to farm for part of the year and market the things that I grow for the other part of the year. So, you know, if Sonoma County could support me growing everything during the summer season and then coming and selling it during the fall and winter, that would be wonderful. Mm-hmm. Time will tell whether or not that can be a financially sustainable thing. Mm-hmm. But for now, I would say, we'll be farming 3/4 of the year, mm-hmm. or, whatever our soaking fields will permit.
Right.
And the market will allow.
Okay. We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be right back here on Mouthful.
Down by my house late at night, you can't see from the freeway, but no silhouette but a light left on, burning there for love. Smoke is rising from the back, coming out my.
You're listening to Mouthful. I'm Michelle Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. We have with us Adam Davidoff, Ellie Hilmer, and Jill Adams. And if you've listened to the show for very long, you know, or know me at all, I don't think about age. I mean, I've never done anything age appropriate. I don't care about age. But in this instant, I am going to mention age because y'all are really young. And that fills me with optimism. If you on national news or reading, you know, various articles, you hear so much about how many family farms we lose every year, just the complete disappearance of them. And here are three young people, and you've chosen to farm. And I just think that that is fabulous. But why? You know, what's the passion that directs you? Anybody jump on in?
Yeah, this is actually something that I address almost every single month during the growing season when I think about quitting. And then I think about what else would I rather do? And mm-hmm. there's absolutely nothing. I love farming, and it's so fulfilling. And even though it's the biggest challenge of my life, that's what I'm up for, and that's what mm-hmm. I'm looking for.
What did you do before you started farming? And we should say this is Ellie of Wild Rose Ranch.
I was a student in Santa Cruz, and I studied agroecology there. Mm-hmm. And so throughout my time as a student, I was doing internships. And
they have some gardens there.
Yes. Yeah. There's a 25-acre farm and garden on campus.
Yeah, I think we've had other people here. Did Ken Orchard? Yes, no, Ken went there.
Did.
Yeah, he's been on Mouthful a couple of times. He went there and some other people, too.
Mm-hmm. And so that was a great place just for getting my hands in the dirt because I grew up in L.A., mm-hmm. Not from a farming family. But in Santa Cruz was where I really developed my love for farming. And moving up here, I've been learning so much as I've taken a more, I guess it's an independent approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
Balin and I just going out and teaching ourselves every day.
Uh-huh. Jill, what got you in? What possessed you?
Possessed me. I was doing biological research, like for, you know, working on endangered species projects, you know, preservation, and none of that really felt as compelling, or it just didn't really feel like I was actually working for the greater good. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess. And I started learning more about food and how it relates to the Earth's ecosystems and I don't know, everything. And then I started woofing. I went to New Zealand and woofed for 5 months. And woof is willing workers on organic farms.
Oh, I've read about that. Yeah,
yeah.
So explain that program a little more, please.
Not every country, but many countries in the world have their own woof program, and mm-hmm. you can sign up for like $20, $25, and you get a booklet of all the subscribing farmers and basically what their needs are, when they are, when they need people, where they are located, and the situation. And you basically go and you trade your labor for room and board. And mm-hmm. so it's a great way to travel, but but it's also a great way to learn different styles of farming. And I stayed on a farm for 2 weeks and did beekeeping, and the farmer trained us in 2 days, and then he and his wife went off to work. We got there on a weekend and trained my friend Chris and I, and then they went off to work, and we handled the honey operation for the next week, and it was
how did
amazing.
That go? It went well?
Yeah, oh my God, it was like... That was awesome. That was really awesome. It was very cool. So yeah, I don't know. I shared a sheep and whatever. It was really great. So yeah, and it was during that trip that I felt like, oh my God, this is it. Like, I really want to learn more about this. I almost canceled the rest of my trip because I felt the more money I spent in New Zealand traveling, the less money I'll have to start my own farm when I get back. Mm-hmm. It was that just compelling and overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And but I stayed and finished the travels, but then came back and woofed on a farm in Sebastopol, an Easy
really?
Sweet Farm. Yeah,
which one?
Neil Dunnett's Easy Sweet Farm.
Oh, right, yeah.
You probably remember him from like
yeah.
5 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I interned there, and then after that started my own farm, and it's been completely satisfying and completely frustrating and completely frightening, and mm-hmm. but really satisfying. Yeah, just to grow your own food, work for yourself, mm-hmm. Be outside all the time, and, mm-hmm. and be able to experiment with different things and, you know, try a new crop. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, then at least, you know, you have some food for yourself. Or I don't know, it's fantastic, mm-hmm. really.
And how about you, Adam?
I used to lead backpacking trips all over the western part of the United States, and I'd bounce from mountain range to mountain range working for different organizations. And I just had no sense of place in doing that. I knew that I loved to be outside, and I knew that I loved to eat, that's for sure. And kind of just decided I need to put roots down, sort of literally and figuratively.
Mm-hmm.
And
hence the root crops.
Yeah, that's part of it. And I actually lived with Ellie and her partner Balin during college, and we'd worked on that same farm in Santa Cruz together, uh-huh. and had some sort of parallel experiences. So I had that sort of in my blood, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
And it just sort of evolved from the mountains to the farm, and I was stayed at a couple farms for a year or close to it, and never went anywhere. Didn't even go home to visit my parents.
Mm-hmm. Where is home?
Home's Sebastopol.
Oh, it is. So your parents are in Sebastopol.
Yeah, they're about 3 miles from my farm. It's a pretty cool.
Oh, that's great.
Cool feeling, yeah.
Uh huh.
So
we're coming up on the end of the major growing season. What do you do in the downtime? I think of you sitting around the kitchen table looking at seed catalogs, deciding what seeds you're going to order, that sort of thing. Am I right?
Sometimes when I think about what there is to do during the winter, I feel almost as overwhelmed as I do in July when I'm chasing around sprinklers and seeding stuff. And, you know, we have different machines to repair. We have haste dry storage to build, a leaky barn roof to fix. We've got goats to work with.
Are you doing with your goats?
We were milking them this past year, and we use some of the male goats for meat as well.
Uh-huh. And then do you sell the milk?
No, it's just for ourselves.
Just for yourselves, okay. So yeah. It's not a huge dairy
yeah.
operation.
Yeah, just a gallon a day. It's enough to make some cheese and have some fun with.
Sure, a little yogurt maybe.
Yep. Oh yeah, a lot of yogurt, a lot of smoothies.
Uh-huh. I like goat yogurt a lot.
Yeah, it's goat dairies is it's a wonderful dairy that's not so appreciated mm-hmm. widely at least.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of other things we got going on during the winter, it just can, you know, we still haven't as we say put our fields to bed yet. We still have things lying out there that need to come in out of the wetness and mm-hmm. Just sort of building infrastructure and relationships with our animals so that we can easily manage them and move them around to come next spring and season. Animals don't just magically go where you want them to go. And, and so just putting in the time and being around so that they're really comfortable with you and what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Back to seed catalogs. Do you peruse them and buy from them?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can say this on the radio, but it's like farmer's porn.
Yeah. It's really yes, amazing. You can say that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. All the pretty pictures, all the great descriptions, and all the like fantasies of, oh my God, this will be great, and oh, people will love this, and oh, look at this fun purple thing, and definitely. But so yeah, there's ordering seeds, there's seed inventories.
Yeah, I get a few seed catalogs. Yeah. And I initially turn to the lettuce section and I start looking at all.
Nice.
I mean, that's food porn for me is looking at all the different butter lettuces.
Nice.
I want y'all to grow more butter lettuce. Ever since we lost two sisters' farm. No one has come in. There's a hole waiting to be filled.
Right, I'll tell Libby. She'll be on it, I bet, in a heartbeat. Seriously.
Okay, yeah, because they, yeah, did you know them?
I did. Yeah,
and
did.
They grew. There was this one type of butter lettuce, Pirat, P-I-R-A-T. And it was probably a combination of where they were, as well as the seed, but it's not one that's commonly grown. She said the seeds were sort of hard to get. But they ruined me with that lettuce. It was just so perfectly tender that I just, when I don't have it, I miss it, no matter what other lettuce I'm eating. So there's definitely, you know, and there was a need. If I didn't get to the Sebastopol market on time, they would sometimes be sold out. So it was very popular. And it's very beautiful. It's a little speckled.
I love the speckled lettuces. It's gorgeous. Yeah, for sure.
And they're just so good. But that's been, I'd say, for the last maybe 3 years, just as both a shopper and then somebody who writes about this all the time, that's been the hardest thing to find is enough really good lettuce. So, you know, for you guys, for anyone listening, grow more lettuce, please grow more lettuce. Something I wanted to ask that was along the lines, but I'll remember it. Let's talk about the fermentation, and let's taste what you've brought.
Okay.
Because it's very pretty. There's something there that, is it, I'm going to guess it's not beets, even though it's the color of beets. Is it beets?
It is. Yeah,
oh, it is.
This
okay.
is apple kraut. There's cabbage, apples, beets, and juniper berries in it, and salt. And so it has a little bit more sweetness from the apples and beets. I'm going to put some in this bowl here, and we'll just use it as finger food, if you don't mind.
Don't mind at all. And then sitting right next to it is, I'm going to guess, it's a watermelon radish?
Yes.
That has been enjoyed by some critters?
Yes.
Definitely organic?
Yes.
Tell us about watermelon radishes. I thought we'd start seeing more of these in mainstream markets, and I don't think we have.
Yeah, which is really surprising.
Yeah, it surprises me, too.
I can't tell you why, but here's the apple kraut. Yeah, they're so much fun, and so at market, we have to cut them open so people understand
what
they're
they are.
Getting. And it's just, it has kind of a greenish, white, pale skin, but then when you cut it open, it has this red center. It's really beautiful. It's like a flower, a sun, or I don't know.
It is. It's like a sunburst. It's like a crimson sunburst.
Yeah.
And you can really see why they call it watermelon radish.
And then in addition to being beautiful, it's the best tasting radish that I've found. I like all kinds of radishes, but sometimes the spiciness can get to me.
Yeah, sometimes the heat can be really overwhelming.
Yeah, but these are the mildest and sweetest radishes that I've found, and I can just eat these. I eat them like apples, kind of. Like, I'll put them on a slice of this radish on a cracker with some cheese or something like that.
One of my favorite things is either a cracker or some nice bread, maybe toasted, and then either creme fraiche or a nice fresh goat cheese with sliced radishes on top. So good.
Yes. Here's some of this.
So that's it, yeah.
I'm sure all of you have tasted.
Well, we're at the end, towards the end of the season. These won't continue through winter, will they?
They would probably, but we won't have them through the winter. We didn't plant that many.
Now, one thing, if I remember correctly from when I was a little girl, I grew radishes.
Yes.
I had this little square of land, and I would go out and cultivate it, and I would plant my radish seeds. And they really reward you quickly. It seems like from the time you put the seed in the ground, 3 weeks later, you're picking a radish.
They do.
What about the one? Now, we should say, if you've never seen one, they're about the size of a medium apple. They're much bigger than a regular radish. So how long for these?
These are longer days, like maybe 55 days, almost 2 months. And so they do take almost twice as long as the small radishes, but they get a lot bigger too. But yeah, radishes, I mean, that's one of the reasons that they're great for children's gardens too, is that you plant the seeds and they sprout like a day later.
Yeah.
and then you're harvesting them a few weeks later. And so So they're really rewarding. But yeah, so these radishes, they aren't more difficult to grow, but they take twice as long. And so that's the main difference. Yes.
That's really good to know.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. For people who think that they have a black thumb, I just think plant some radishes.
Oh, radishes, absolutely.
You know, this, what did you call this?
That's the apple kraut.
Yeah, that's right, apple kraut. You know, the sweetness is really minimal. I was expecting it to be sweeter, but it's very balanced.
Yeah, it still has the sour pickled flavor.
Now, when you make it and you say you only add salt, now, do you pound?
Yes, and actually, this to bring it back to the farmer's market, I pound it with a kraut pounder that I bought from a woman at the farmer's market. It's called By the Elven Moon, is her business.
Really? I've missed
And she
her.
Does wood lathe. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Wood lathe?
Yes. Wood lathe, and so she has wooden bowls, and she makes rolling pins. And,
yes, I have seen her.
And one day I walked past, and she had a kraut pounder there. I said, is that a kraut pounder? And she said, yes, I can't believe you knew what it was. And I guess one person had commissioned her to make one, and so she just had one on hand. Mm-hmm. And now, it's great.
Compare it in size. Say, think of a standard mortar, maybe a wooden mortar. How much bigger would it be than a mortar? Not a mortar, I'm sorry, a pestle, the wooden part that goes. You know, I have a pestle that is, well, I have two. I have a Thai pestle, which is about this big around,
say,
somewhere between a ping pong ball and a tennis ball.
Right.
And then I have one that's just a little bit smaller than that, that came with the suribachi.
So this, it's actually designed specifically where it fits perfectly inside a wide mouth mason jar.
Oh.
Yeah. And I obviously make my kraut in much bigger containers, but that's the size.
So is it meant to pound the cabbage inside the mason jar?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, because I don't really have to pound it necessarily. You're just trying to get all the air bubbles out.
Okay. Pounded it when I've made it before. But then I was speaking, we had a guest on, I think it was Ann Fisher Silva. You know her. She's the local chapter head of the Weston A. Price Foundation.
Absolutely.
And she's great. And she was talking about making sauerkraut, and she was talking about pounding it. And so I was like, oh, well, I haven't pounded mine before. That's interesting.
Yeah, and so that just helps for getting all the air out because the fermentation is an anaerobic process. Mm-hmm. It has to be submerged in the liquids. And since I don't add water, just the vegetables and salt, you need to draw all the juice out of the vegetables.
Yeah, so, and pounding, I would think, would release.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
And so how long does it take you? Let's just say you're making a crock full, someone at home. Mm-hmm. To make it that way without adding a brine, but it just doing the natural liquids. From the time you first start it to when it's ready to eat, about how long a time period?
It depends on the temperature. When you're just making it at home, the temperature of your house can be variable. In the summertime, when the temperatures are, you know, between 60 and 80 degrees, 80 is pretty warm for fermenting. That's less than ideal. But then it will go for, it'll be ready in 2 weeks, easy. Mm-hmm. But in the winter when it's chilly, I'll let my kraut go when I'm making it at home for 2 months.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. And it's really just fermenting it until you like the taste of it. Mm-hmm. It's a really personal process.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just taste it at various stages, and when you're happy with it, just put in the fridge and it'll keep.
It'll keep for a long time?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I made it successfully once. It was so good. And then I made it unsuccessfully another time. And I think this winter I'm going to try again. Why don't we take another musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back.
Songs on a hip radio. In a pickup truck behind the cows, driving them to pasture. How I miss
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. How you doing? Thanks for sticking with us. We are talking about three young farmers who go to the Santa Rosa Farmers Market. And I know that, Jill, you go to Sebastopol as well. Mm-hmm. Do you go to any others?
No, I used to go to Cotati, but now I just do the Santa Rosa Wednesday and Saturday and then Sebastopol.
Okay. And Ellie, do you go to any others?
I was at the Occidental Farmers Market in the summer season.
That's a great market.
It's
a really, really great market.
Yes.
And how about you, Adam?
We were at Occidental as well.
Oh, okay, great.
And occasionally in Sebastopol, we're hoping to be there more full-time next year.
Okay, great. We were talking about fermentation. We tasted your applekraut. It's really good. What does it sell for?
I have two different size jars. Uh-huh. The 16-ounce jar is $8, mm-hmm. and the 12-ounce jar is $5. But with that price, I also charge a $1 jar deposit.
Mm. So you people can bring back jars to you?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, just try and keep them in circulation.
Yeah, that's really great. Cool. And did you have something else you wanted us to taste?
This is the Cortito that we can taste. This is the Salvadorian style kraut. We talked about it earlier.
Yes. And Cortito. Cortito is really great if you have a pupusa. It's just not a pupusa if you don't have Cortito with it.
It's true.
And so a lot of people think they'll look at Cortito and they'll think that it's kimchi.
Yeah, it looks similar. They do look very similar in the jar. But they have very different flavors.
Yes.
The kimchi is flavored with, or I flavor my kimchi. It's with garlic and lots of ginger, mm-hmm. and pepper. And the Cortito has the red onions and lots of different chili peppers. This one I had so much fun with Jill's chilies. I used, I think, 5 different kinds of chilies in this one. Habaneros, serranos. The Hungarian.
Black Hungarian.
Yes.
And the ahi amarillo, I think you used?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And that's really interesting. You don't get the heat right away.
Right.
And then it's just right in the mid-palate. And then on the long finish, there's heat. But as soon as you say habanero, you scare a lot of people. It's really accessible.
Yeah.
It's really lovely.
The fermentation process just absorbs spice. It's been so interesting. Every time I make a new batch, I throw in more and more chilies, just trying to get some heat in there.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm at the point where I'm throwing in a handful of habaneros to a batch of Cortito, and it still comes out, like, medium spicy. Yeah.
But it's nice. The hot finish is really pleasant, and it doesn't have... Some people, I think, are really sensitive to that forward-in-the-mouth heat,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have any of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's very nice. Very, very nice. So back to the farmer's market. Where was the question? It was right there in my head, and now it's gone. Well, Sebastopol and Healdsburg have one weekend left. Next weekend we have Saturday in Healdsburg, and then we have Sunday in Sebastopol. And after that, there are 3 farmers markets a week in Sonoma County. There's the Friday market over in the town of Sonoma. It's a schlep if you're on the west side of Sonoma Mountain. And then on Wednesdays and Saturdays, rain or shine. And I love it. There's been a few times it's been so blustery, and I'm driving past for another reason. And there are always the diehard farmers. They're out there in, you know, all of their rain gear, and they're at that market. And I just think that's so great.
And there are always diehard customers, too.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Yeah. 8:30 to noon. Wednesdays and Saturdays at the east parking lot of the Veterans building there across, I guess you'd say across Highway 12 from their fairgrounds. I'm curious, I think when people heard that there was some unhappiness at the farmers market, there's been some stuff in the papers, made me realize that a lot of people don't really know what it takes to make a farmer's market function. And I think for people who really haven't paid much attention, they think that you show up. You know, you show up, you set it like a flea market. I think they think more like that. You show up, you pay a stall fee, and you set up and you sell. But there's a lot more that needs to happen for Farmers Market, and I know that none of you are managers, and so none of these questions, I don't know if we can do any summary of some of the things that it takes. I know a little bit about it. And Jill, were you on the board for a while?
I was on the board for 3 years.
Yeah. Okay, for 3 years. So you could probably talk a little bit about it. I mean, just things like, there are state regulations.
There are state regulations.
There's certified farmers markets, mm-hmm. and then markets that aren't certified. That's something different. But what does, say, certification guarantee a shopper?
It's supposed to guarantee a shopper that the farmers that are there are selling crops that or produce that they actually grow
that they've
themselves.
Grown.
Certified does not mean that it's organic. Everybody who sells at a certified, or every grower that sells at a certified market has to be a certified farmer within their county.
Oh, okay.
But they don't necessarily have to be certified organic.
Right. Because I know you could go to, I mean, I haven't been to a flea market in many, many, many years, but you could go to flea markets and you would see maybe somebody with a table of produce. That could be produce that was purchased, say, from the wholesale.
From anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And the same with non-certified farmers markets. Right. Anybody can set up a stall. And some people have done that. And if you're out, you know, in a really rural area and you have to drive really far to get to a market, that's a great service. But the farmers market guarantees something else. And so that market certification, that's what it means. You are a certified farmer. But it also doesn't mean, like, if you have a farmer's market in Sonoma County, certified doesn't mean that all your farmers are from Sonoma County.
Correct. Yeah,
I think that's another place that there's a lot of misunderstanding.
Probably, yeah. And I think being the biggest market in Sonoma County, we attract more vendors from out of county, and which is great. But there's a lot of disagreements. People within the market community sort of disagree how much should be from out of county, how much should be only in county, and the market manager has their own opinion, and the board has their opinion, and the other vendors have their opinions, and it's for the people who make those decisions, it's really hard to balance everybody's wants and desires and expectations with any of the managing issues. It's really hard to balance, and you can't make anybody or everybody happy all the time.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what we're kind of up against. I think there's just been a disagreement of how things should be run or who should be let in and not let in. And
I think when I was first really learning a lot about markets, I was naive. And I thought, well, that person's not from Sonoma County. Why are they here? And that was like 4 or 5 market managers ago. And I asked them about it. And I asked someone, and they said, well, you know, if we didn't let other people from other counties into our market, our farmers wouldn't be able to go to other markets. And maybe this is not, you know, if there's somebody who's growing quite a lot, they can't make a living wage based on the number of shoppers here. They have to go to other markets. And as soon as they said it, it's like, that makes total sense, and that settled the issue for me.
Yeah, I never even thought about it like that, but that's probably, I guess that's true.
Yeah, we've got somebody like Ken Orchard. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone other than
Sonoma
Ken.
Sonoma County.
Yeah, he's Sonoma, but he goes to the Marin Market.
Oh, I see.
That's what I meant, and I can think there have been a few. I think Nancy Skull of Middleton, she goes to the St. Helena Market.
Okay.
And they said, you know, if we close the markets to other people, they would close markets to us. And it's like, okay.
I think the other part of it, too, is that although Sonoma County is incredibly bountiful, there's just some things that can't be grown.
Sure.
At any time of year or at certain times of year. So it's nice to be able to bring in early summer crops from out of county, from the valley, I guess. So that's part of it, is to just offer more of a diversity at the largest market in Sonoma County.
And then some people, you said, and we're almost out of time, some people also take issue with the addition of crafts.
Yeah, that's
true. And prepared foods.
Yeah, some people argue, like, hey, we're not a flea market. But I don't know. I think the more the merrier, really, up to a certain extent. I mean, I think there should be a certain number of farmers, a certain percentage. But.
And is that part of the bylaws of any particular market that you have to have?
Right.
You have to give either priority or you have to have a balance, a certain percentage?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we should probably start saying goodbye. I told you this hour was going to fly past, didn't I? Because I want to make sure everyone knows who was on the show. So let's go back to you, Adam Davidoff, New Family Farm. You'll be at, will you be at Santa Rosa Farmers Market at all.
Yeah, but indefinitely, not year-round.
Yeah, but you'll be there for the next few weeks.
Yes.
You need a nice winter squash. Maybe you're going to make a nice winter squash risotto or something. You can find David's squash. And will you be at the Farewell Market in Sebastopol next week?
Yes.
Excellent. And Ellie, Wild Rose Farm, Ellie Hilmer.
Yes.
You'll be there for much of the season.
The Santa Rosa Farmers Market on mm-hmm. Saturday mornings. We're there every Saturday,
okay.
year-round.
Great.
Rain or shine.
Okay. Well, thanks so much to both of you for taking time to giving up your Sunday night. I know Sunday nights are really important
thanks
to people,
for
and I appreciate
us.
It. And Jill Adams, you will be, you're not there year-round.
Correct. Yeah, I'll be at the last Sebastopol Market mm-hmm. next week, and then I'll be at Santa Rosa Wednesday and Saturday mornings, probably through December and hopefully into January by okay. a couple weeks.
And so if you need to stock up on fabulous Chipotle powder, got to get there before the end of December. Will you have enough to get us through December?
I think so.
Okay, yeah. Excellent.
And dry beans.
Your dry beans are excellent. I cooked some the other night. Yay. Oh, they're so good. I had dried beans and dinosaur or lacinato kale.
Nice.
It's really delicious. And on that note, we are out of time. So meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. In the meantime, have a great holiday. Take care of yourselves and feed yourself something really good. Feed someone you love something really good too. And then meet us back here. KRCB Radio 91.
Mouthful is hosted and produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast at krcb.org or from iTunes.